you're listening to All the News Not Fit for Print with Austin Dave and Perry Smith, only on The Vault.
Welcome back to another episode of All the News Not Fit for Print. This is Perry Smith with Austin Dave of The Signal newspaper and SignalSCV.com. We are here in our podcast studio once again to talk about the crime beat from the last week in the Santa Clarita Valley. We had a couple interesting incidents to talk about. Austin Dave was up in the helicopter with the sheriff's department. There was a warrant service on Mike's tires that shut down Soledad Canyon, and a murder case that took an interesting turn when we started to learn a little bit about the circumstances around what happened for the Santa Clarita Valley's fifth murder in 2017. For All the News Not Fit for Print, every week we're going to be talking about crime stories from the Santa Clarita Valley and what happened and our observations from the news beat. And we had a little bit of a unique perspective this week, right? Austin, you were up there in the helicopter with the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. Tell me a little bit about what that experience was like.
It was really interesting, and I found that the world is very different from about 3,000 feet up in the air.
Is that how high you guys were, 3,000 feet?
On average. Okay. I know we were patrolling the Santa Clarita Valley at about 2,000, 3,000 feet at about 110 miles per hour. That was fun. And it was fun, you know, meeting Maury and Misty from the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department's Aero Bureau. Very nice stand-up people, and doing a great service up there in the air for the citizens of Los Angeles County.
Now, that's Sergeant Zager. He is the one who was the pilot, and he kind of toured you around the valley. So talk to me about what happened. You guys took off from the Santa Clarita Valley Sheriff's Station, because I guess there's a helipad up there I didn't even know about.
There is. They arrived at about 3 o'clock p.m., and we took off. About half hour later, we went over some safety guidelines and whatnot. And
What were they telling you? Don't stick anything out the helicopter.
Don't jump out the helicopter. Okay. Don't jump into the rotors. And it was
pretty solid advice.
I guess you got to
go over that. Okay.
But when you're working with those kind of professionals and the people at that level, I mean, they fly often, and they fly, you know, 4 days a week, right, here and there. And it was very interesting. We took off from the sheriff's station, went up, listened to a few calls, went over the jail, over a couple places, just kind of getting our bearings set, you know, especially for me, not being in a helicopter before, it was very different.
Now, I'm someone who can get a little turned around when McBean turns into Magic Mountain Parkway. So as someone like yourself who knows the area a little bit better, but you were getting up there in the helicopter from 3,000 feet, how does that kind of change things around?
Completely. Everything, it's almost like a 2D versus 3D view on Google.
Interesting.
And you get up there and you start to see the hills, you know, from, you know, when you're driving up the hills, you don't really feel like it's going uphill, but you look from up there and you can see everything. You can see where people are positioned. And we did answer one call here in the valley for a assault that had taken place, you know, on Sierra Highway. And we flew up and over, you know, the hills and into Agua Dulce, and I had no clue where we were.
Now, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you were obviously up there, but they have shifts so that Aero helicopter is kind of always patrolling in the sky or in the area. Is that how that worked for that block that you were up there with them?
Generally, and we have 15 of those helicopters, 3 of what they call the Big Puma, and
That's a big rescue copter, I'm guessing.
Correct, Air Rescue 5. But the helicopter we were in was Air 29. We have 15 of those types of helicopters. But that helicopter is primarily for North County. And that's Santa Clarita Valley, that's Malibu, that's Antelope Valley. So between San Bernardino County line in Los Angeles County to Kern in Los Angeles to Ventura in Los Angeles, basically everything north of the city of Los Angeles, including parts of Los Hills and Malibu. So that helicopter is designated for those areas because it is that type of terrain, and it is designated for response in those areas, remote areas, Santa Clarita, Castaic, so areas that are not typically like your suburb of Los Angeles City.
And I know that everybody can check out what you guys were seeing at the video that's coming on the Vault. But tell me a little bit about your, how did Sergeant Zager describe his kind of average day?
His day, typically, it's everywhere. I mean, in many cases, they're responding to different calls. So it could be a pursuit. Oftentimes, it's not. It could be a call for backup for a deputy on the ground. Their primary goal up there on a typical day is to provide aerial support, and the key word of that being support. When they go on different calls on the ground, you see the ground units, you know, whizzing past you on Soledad Canyon Road, say they need backup, they're going to come up there and give them that extra perspective. They're able to see, and we were able to witness it myself. I was able to see them, hey, you know, you need continue your containment over here. There's an area that's vulnerable over here. I don't see any suspects. You know, we were up there locating suspects. So on a typical day, it varies. There's no typical day for them. Once they're up in the air, it could be anything.
Now, we had a story at signalscv.com that we received as from the tip from you from being up in the air about an alleged assault that had occurred involving an angry landowner, it sounded like, and somebody who was paving on his property or near his property.
Yes.
And that upset him. And tell me about, you know, that how that whole scene unfolded.
So we were flying over Valencia at that point, and we had come about, Bokeh Junction, and we had heard a call for a possible assault that had taken place on Sierra Highway in Agua Dulce. So we flew up and over. And
how long did it take? I'm curious to get, because it takes us about 30 minutes by car. So I'm
guessing about five, about 4 to 5, a little less.
Traffic free. Okay. Yeah.
And we were flying at about 130 miles per hour
right.
up to Agua Dulce, where we came in. They didn't request a helicopter, but at that point, they didn't think they needed one on the ground.
Well, let me just ask you this real quick. When you're going in a car at 130 miles an hour, you feel it. It looked like your helicopter was mm-hmm. pretty open there. I mean, how fast does 130 miles an hour feel at 3,000 feet?
Feels like you're going 5 miles per hour.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. You don't feel like you're flying. I mean, we were going between 50 to 130 and you didn't feel the difference between the two because you don't have that reference point on the ground. It's almost like when you take off on an airplane, when you're coming down to land, you start to feel it once you get toward the runway. You see how fast you're going. For us, there's nothing going past us. We're above it all.
Right. So it's that relative. You don't have a relative
exactly.
gauge. So, okay, you're going back to the story. You're going up. You're leaving Bokeh Junction. You're heading to Agua Dulce.
So we get there, and there's a few ground units on the ground. I counted four. Three to the, I want to say, north side of the house, one to the west. And we saw the units on the ground taking their position. And we came in and we performed a maneuver called orbiting where you're making continuous left turns. And that keeps the helicopter safe. That keeps the helicopter safe from gunfire, things like that. And so it's a continuous left turn, very, very tight left turn. And I didn't get motion sickness. Maury and Misty both thought I was going to. I didn't.
Well, and you just kept going kind of in a circle.
For about 10 minutes, continuous left circles. It's not like a left and then keep going and then a left. It's a continuous tight left circle.
Gotcha.
And so we were able to tell the deputies on the ground, hey, this is what we're seeing. You know, and from the ground, from the air, you could see that there were points in their containment that were not completely sealed off. And so we had talked about it up there that that happens constantly because on the ground you have one perspective. Up in the air, you can see it all. And so we were watching to make sure no one was running out. And then we eventually made call-outs to the suspect and made call-outs to come outside.
From the helicopter?
From the helicopter.
Wow, that's cool. So yeah. How high are you at that point? You're not at 3,000 feet at that
point. No, we're probably at about, I want to say 1,000, a little less, a little more, about that altitude. And made call-outs to the suspect to come outside. Still didn't come outside. But he had phoned the sheriff's station saying that he was very irritated by the helicopter above his house. And so you could see we were making some kind of good headway there.
Right. So rewind a little bit to going back to a Thursday morning prior to you going up in the helicopter. We didn't quite have the same bird's eye view on this incident, so we're still kind of trying to figure out what happened. But we were on scene for a breaking news story that you had received for a tip on social media about an incident going on in Canyon Country, just down the road on the 14, near Soledad and Langside. What was happening there?
The tip we received came in early Thursday morning, and what had happened was they saw a number of SWAT vehicles outside of the Mike's Tire Shop, just off of Furnival and Soledad Canyon Road. Now, several other people had reported seeing Soledad Canyon Road closed at some point, the entire road, both directions. And typically, that's typical of a tactical situation. In some cases, when whatever they're dealing with is too close to the general public, they will seal off certain parts of it. And that's a safety precaution. Now, what they were seeing, they saw a number of SWAT vehicles. They saw a number of deputies in tactical gear. And that's typical of what's called an SEB response. An SEB, the Special Enforcement Bureau of the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department.
That's basically the SWAT.
Yeah, pretty much. It's basically a SWAT team. They serve in more functions than a typical SWAT team would. And so they have negotiations. They have different types of tactics that they would use that a SWAT team might not. And in this sense, they were engaged as a SWAT team. So they were providing that tactical support for local deputies on whatever call that they were on. We still don't have the details as to exactly what the nature of the call was, but we do have confirmation that the SEB, or the Special Enforcement Bureau, did respond to assist our local deputies.
We both got calls at like 6 in the morning about there. I guess when we had been notified, they'd already been on scene for like an hour or so.
Just about.
But you went out there, and I tried calling the sheriff's station, and all that we could get was that they were servicing a warrant at the location.
Exactly.
We learned that they were servicing a warrant location from them, and then when we went a couple hours later, once we came into the office, kind of reconvened and then decided to go over there and talk to Mike of Mike's Tires, who is well known in this community. We saw comments and interesting posts every time we have a story involving there, and this isn't the first story involving the location. However, this time around, we went into Mike and we gave a little interesting, you know, good cop, bad cop dynamic. You went in there and...
I went in there with heart.
You went in there with heart, and you really tried to appeal to Mike's sense of community and the fact that we're out there at the crime scene. Lots of folks, especially in that area, because you live around there, know who you are, seen your videos. So you just said, hey, I'm here for the community to kind of find out what happened, make sure everybody's okay. Instantly, he shuts us down. No, you're not.
Exactly.
You're snooping.
I came in with compassion and went for the compassion angle. And that's honestly, it's the truth. And in many cases, we go in and it's just, we care.
It's
we
not just.
We want to know are you okay? Before we know what's going on,
right.
Is everybody okay? And you want to give condolences when people aren't okay. If someone was hurt or something bad happened, you want to tell them like, hey, you know, people are thinking about you. But he wasn't really interested in that.
No, and we found he had a long history with the Signal dating back to the era of Scott Newhall, and he had a confrontation with Scott apparently decades ago, it sounded like, from the nature
well
of the story.
Well before I was even born. Going on apparently well before I was even a thought.
Because, yeah, Mike, you know, Scott hasn't been associated with the Signal in at least 25 years, and he's been passed away for a few as well. So it was just a an interesting bit of history, another reminder of the small town community that we live in, even though it's the third largest city in LA.
And some very colorful people that are still around here,
And some very colorful vestiges of that past. And so Mike was instantly not interested in going on the record and kind of sharing information for the story, but he did talk to us, after we identified ourselves with the Signal and said, just, hey, we had a few questions. He confirmed for us that the police were there, he said that the sheriff's deputies were actually the folks that had broken his door, which kind of was some interesting information for us, right?
It was. And typically what happens with those cases is the doors get boarded up.
Right.
When we were there, the doors weren't boarded up, and they weren't obviously broken. There wasn't glass laying out. It was cleaned up. Now the doors are, they're boarded up now.
Right.
I mean, I would expect them to be boarded up because you don't want anybody—
Overnight.
You know, exactly.
Yeah. Stealing your equipment.
Yeah. Right. And we still don't know. We still don't know what the exact nature of that call was. Not a lot of people talking. Sheriff's Department not talking. Mike definitely not talking.
Despite our displays of compassion and concern, he was not interested in reaching out and in returning that. But everyone was okay. There was somebody taken into custody. And then we later learned that there was a family dispute at that location.
Yeah, there was another call that came in about that had been cleared up at about 8:30.
Right.
Another call came in a little more than an hour later for—
An hour after the search warrant had been serviced and somebody had been taken into custody. Then
yeah.
There was another incident at the location.
There's some kind of disturbance. What had surrounded that disturbance, we don't know. We had heard reports that there was a person there who was possibly a family member who was screaming, hollering, making a ruckus, and fulfilling exactly what a disturbance would be, and we don't know the nature of that call.
However, it does kind of explain Mike's reticence if there was a domestic dispute there or if something was going
correct.
On involving a potentially a family member. We don't know if it was his family, obviously, because there was no real conversation
right.
there.
And whatever the matter
specifics.
Was, they just want to keep it private.
Right.
And that was made apparent when we were there that no discussion was going to take place. But he did say that he knew the person who was being taken into custody, who had been taken into custody by the sheriff's department. And he kind of chuckled when he said that, yes, I know who it is.
Yeah.
And he wasn't going to give that up or what the nature of the call was.
Now, we did, we'd heard that from the Sheriff's Information Bureau, because, you know, what some people don't always, aren't always aware of is that, you know, a lot of the specialty units in the Santa Clarita Valley that operate here are based out of Los Angeles. And so when we seek information, we have to go to downtown Los Angeles through the Sheriff's Information Bureau. And this was one of those incidents. So they had let us know that it was a narcotics related arrest. We don't know if narcotics were seized or if any narcotics were found, just that the warrant was being served by the narcotics unit. So it was probably related to some sort of drug crime. And with those incidents too, you know, people get very frustrated when we don't have information right away. But the other thing that people need to realize and understand is that that information is purposely withheld because they're oftentimes looking to turn that suspect into more evidence, and they don't want us to reveal who that suspect is because it would then jeopardize their chain of evidence, their investigation, and a lot of other things. But they do all come out eventually when it becomes public record.
Well, especially with narcotics investigations, and a lot of that stems from, you know, our nation's problem with drugs, and they are trying to, you know, combat it within the laws that they have right now. And in some cases, that includes withholding that information. Right. And for them, that information, it comes out eventually. It's just not now. But we do know that there was something going on. We do know that the SWAT team was there. We do know all of these things. It's just we don't know the particulars filling in those gaps between why.
Right. And speaking of how the public record can actually change things, that kind of takes us to our third topic, which is the Brian Rodriguez murder. It was the fifth person murdered in the Santa Clarita Valley in 2017, and it was a bizarre circumstance. We didn't know what was going on at first, and then once we kind of understood some of the evidence from the court phase of things, we got a little different picture of what happened. You were there at the very beginning of this one, Austin, and you know, I was at the radio station at the time, but we were both had reporters on scene. At the very beginning, this was a missing persons case. This was an 18-year-old. They thought the initial suspicion was because he was an 18-year-old adult. He was a voluntary missing person. He had left. His significant other, who was named Christian Ortiz, was there. A boyfriend, we're sure how long they've been together, but they had a relationship, and he was talking to our reporters and yours as well. I just saw a quote at signalscv.com mm-hmm. in the story that was initially ran as far as what happened. What was your kind of initial impression?
And that's what was bizarre. I mean, these missing persons cases, oftentimes runaways, oftentimes people who are voluntarily missing, nothing nefarious about it. This is one of those cases that wasn't.
Well, and to put it in perspective, the last time we checked, I think it was 2016, there was 360 missing persons reports filed. And that kind of gives you an indication they're literally filing these on a daily basis. And
exactly.
So they have to quickly understand where are the priorities, where is the concern. Initially, this one, again, when it's an adult and the person appears to not have any special needs or anything like that, then it's treated as, you know, a voluntary disappearance.
Right, but not a critical missing.
Right.
And most cases, they turn up within a few hours.
Right.
Or someone makes contact with them. This was very different. This was, you know, you had a group of friends who were searching for him near Henry Mayo Newhall Hospital. And his boyfriend was leading the charge, and it went about as a normal missing persons case would, where you have a few friends looking for this person, and then things get quiet all of a sudden, and then you have the police involved all of a sudden.
And the quote from Christian Ortiz, who was the significant other of Brian Rodriguez, the missing person, was, "This is just completely out of his character. I don't know why he would do this. He definitely wouldn't ignore his family. That's the big issue." Now, this was a quote that was given to the police, or to the Signal, rather, a week before Brian's body was ultimately found.
And that's the thing. We spoke to him as we normally would. There was no suspicion at that point. We weren't, you know, surprised. We weren't suspicious. Our reporters that were there treated it like any other interview, and that's really what it was.
And it quickly became a murder investigation when deputies found Brian Rodriguez's body. He was apparently strangled, and it had been put in a closet at this home on Via Valor in Valencia.
Exactly.
And that changed everything. They identified his death as by strangulation. And so we're now looking at this in the context of the murder, in the context of the, you know, Christian Ortiz, they quickly determined was the suspect, and he was arrested. And it's pretty rare that we talk to a murder suspect before they're arrested at the scene of, you know, their alleged crime or while they're looking for the victim.
And it took a second for us to realize that. You know, it was very much like a normal missing persons case. People were trying to find their friend. And then a dark cloud had settled over everything. And that's when we realized, hey, guess what? We looked up this name. The name sounded familiar. The name that they gave us of the person who they arrested. That was the person that was interviewed in all of our news organizations a few days before that.
Right.
And that's when it started taking those bizarre twists.
So then fast forward, and the Los Angeles County Coroner's Office report gave us a whole new set of information that just changed circumstances one more time. And what we learned from the coroner's report was that one thing to take in consideration is that these coroner's reports are often released months after a person is deceased. And that's because of the research, the testing that's involved. They have to determine if the person had any intoxicants, and those tests take months.
And it's really a separate investigation. The coroner, I mean, everyone is doing their own investigation. The sheriff's department does their own investigation. The coroner's office does their own investigation, and they don't interfere with each other. But they do report their findings to each other. But the coroner's job is really to determine how. How did they die? How, in a sense of, was it natural causes, cardiac arrest, drugs induced? Were they murdered? How, what time, how long? And they basically help to make up, here's exactly how this person died. And they report those findings to the sheriff's department.
So the coroner basically ultimately determined that it was erotic asphyxiation online. They had been doing some research on that. They had performed it with each other 5 to 7 times in the past. And so the strangulation death was believed to be part of an intimate experience between these two men. And I think that changes the facet of how we look at the murder investigation. And Jim Holt covered it in depth in his story just for the sake of laying out the circumstances around the death. And I think it kind of changes the light that some might look at Ortiz and the interaction that he had with Rodriguez, as far as this wasn't maybe necessarily how it initially sounded or was portrayed to us and therefore by us, which is a strangulation murder, perhaps a heat of passion crime, perhaps a struggle or a conflict. This might have been more of a voluntary, situation that took a tragic turn. And, we had some people kind of question us as far as, why did those details need to be reported? This was a nice young man who was involved in, church choir and part of the community. And, I just think it's incumbent upon the newspaper to lay out all of the facts and all of the public record. And, in a small community, sometimes that will upset people, and sometimes that will enrage people even. And people will think we're being unfair. But the reality is if we don't report that, we're being unfair to, one side or the other.
Exactly. And a lot of that goes to human survival and car crashes, bridge collapses, shootings, things like that. That's kind of why we have airbags in our car. If we don't report exactly how someone dies, it continues to happen. In this sense, we want the community to know this is how someone died. Something went tragically wrong. Here's how. In a sense, to possibly for someone to read that and infer, okay, you know what? This is something I'm not going to do because there is a dangerous risk that I might die as well.
Right.
And like I said, airbags. That's why we have airbags in the car, because when people started dying from not having that protection, they put that protection in there.
Well, you absolutely, you bring up an excellent point. It's not just for the sake of explaining what happened and letting people know. It's so people can learn from this and understand how dangerous these games are when you're talking about choking and, doing those kinds of acts. It's there is a real danger there, and people should know that if they're doing that, they're taking their lives into their hands. This young man had just graduated from COC in June of 2017. In September, he was found dead, and he was supposed to go to UC San Diego within weeks of that to report to start his college career, continue his university career, I should say. And that's just it's a tragedy, and perhaps avoidable. We don't know the full circumstances yet. We're going to learn even more as this case heads closer to court. Right now, we haven't had the preliminary arraignment, which is when the prosecution will present all of its case, the defense will present all of its case, and then the judge will decide if there's enough evidence to go to trial. Right now, we're set to be headed towards that. But as far as when that will happen, there was actually a continuation this last month. So we're going to have another hearing in the coming months, and we'll have more on that situation when we learn on it, and we'll definitely be able to talk about it a little bit more. But that's where we're at with right now. That was the fifth of six murders. So stay tuned for more on that and keep checking back. This has been All the News That's Fit for Print with Perry Smith and Austin Dave.